Hi, and welcome back to the show. I'm talking now to Ben Southwood, Head of Research at the Adam Smith Institute. Welcome to Tip TV.
Hi.
So you're talking now, looking at inflation. Like, we've seen the latest CPI numbers have seen the UK drop below zero. But we've got, you know, we've got increasing asset prices. We've got nominal incomes up 3-4%. We've had unemployment drop below 5.6%. You know, is this kind of negative inflation a bad thing?
I don't think it's a bad thing. I think that you've got good deflation and bad deflation. I think we probably don't even want to call this a deflationary episode. So if you've got, as you say, if you've got asset prices rising, if you've got a strong economy growing, nominal incomes growing, that's not really deflation as we usually understand it. It's probably just supply side shocks from the outside the UK. So like cheaper oil, for example, making everything cheaper. And if anything, if you look into the numbers and you get a few series of spiking downwards, nearly everything in the CPI is more or less flat or going up. So service prices, for example, are increasing about 2%. It's mainly goods prices which are going down because of the inputs that are getting cheaper.
So there's this problem with people are focusing so much on this headline CPI and they don't see you can have a large amount of inflation. You can have an economy where you have a huge amount of inflation, a huge amount of deflation simultaneously, and you have zero CPI.
Yeah, so obviously with any index which sums up loads of different things, you're going to make an average, and that could hide loads of variation. In general, there isn't that much variation in the CPI series, at least with the stuff that doesn't move around too much. So stuff like service prices, they tend to go up at a steady pace, and that's pretty much it. But some goods which you import the inputs for, import them directly, they might spike around based on the raw materials. But I think that, thankfully, the discourse seems to be right now that this is just a temporary thing and we shouldn't start changing monetary policy, for example. Mark Carney said that everyone should just enjoy the cheap prices for a while. They'll go back to, inflation will go back to 2% soon.
But in terms of Mark Carney, in terms of kind of central bank policy, you know, if you're saying that there is such a thing as good deflation, why should central banks then return to this kind of 2% target rate?
So I guess that you're going to have good deflation. There's good deflation and there's bad deflation. Yeah. We're not always going to be having these positive supply side shocks. In the absence of positive supply side shocks, then we should have about 2% inflation, just because that's what everyone's been expecting for a long time. Firms can't plan into the future if they don't know what the inflation rate is roughly going to be. It doesn't make firms less, doesn't make their plans go out of kilter when we get a supply side change, but it would make their plans go out of kilter if the bank suddenly decided to go for 0% inflation now. It could do that over a super long-term horizon and eventually change inflation target. The actual inflation target it has doesn't matter that much, so long as it keeps to it.
But why should it chase 2%? You know, why?
Well, somewhere between 0 and 4%, I think, seems to be what economists think is the best idea. 4% would mean that we probably would have more leeway in slumps, but it might be a bit risky with inflation, you know, going out of control, or it means that people have to change their prices a lot and this is costly and all that sort of usual stuff. And 0% would mean that maybe in slumps you can't get, you know, if you have sticky wages, then you can't get around them.
But in terms of bad deflation, you know, are we at risk from bad deflation? I mean, what is bad deflation?
So I guess bad deflation is when nominal incomes aren't growing. So you get kind of a spiral of there's not enough money to go around, prices have to be cut, that means wages have to be cut, and it all takes time. Eventually it would be fine. You know, the 19th century economy dealt with 0% inflation or deflation all the time.
Yeah, people talk about that kind of period, that kind of 1873 onwards period, and some people called it a Great Depression type situation. But of course, we had these huge increase in productivity, etc., and so it wasn't say a bad thing.
Yeah, so in the 19th century, you seem to be able to deal with that, but I think that's because everyone expected that in advance. So it's kind of built into your wage contract.
We're tied to the gold standard, which had this fixed monetary.
Yeah, everyone knew what the monetary regime was. Now we know what it is, but it's 2% inflation, roughly.
And so, I mean, we've seen in, to kind of move to a slightly similar subject, you've seen in Europe, we've had such concerns over inflation, and we've had rolling out QE. I mean, we've had QE in the UK for a while. We had, when it first got rolled out, people were so concerned about seeing, these huge spikes in inflation. Why aren't we seeing that? Why didn't that come to fruition?
So I think that there was this huge demand for safe assets in the crisis. And basically, the central banks could pump way, way more than they've done already, and you still wouldn't exhaust that demand. So you couldn't create inflation when people have this huge demand to hold more money, just as a reserve or to be safe.
So it's a kind of focus on, you know, people move away from this idea of inflation as a monetary phenomenon. They start looking at kind of asset price inflation, etc.?
Well, I mean, I still think that inflation is basically inflation and not asset prices, yeah, personally. But I guess people disagree with me on that. That's fair enough. But more, what I more meant was inflation is to do with the demand and supply, yeah, for money. So if the demand for money goes up hugely, then even if you can keep increasing the supply of money, you might not necessarily create much inflation. But I do think the QE has worked, more or less.
How about European QE? You know, we've seen things where we haven't had, you know, we haven't had this kind of, we don't have the low unemployment, we've got unemployment risk there, we have, you know, arguably liquidity traps springing up. Is it likely to work in Europe?
Yes, I think it will work in Europe. I'm very confident in QE working in Europe. In fact, I think that you can already kind of start seeing the European economy turn around. And I'd say that the inflection point was when they announced QE. The QE they're doing, I think it's insufficiently big, and I think it's insufficiently tied to designed outcomes. I think that you can do much smaller QE if you're very explicit about what you're trying to achieve by it. So say, I will do this much until I get this, and I won't stop. You don't actually need to do all that QE because the markets know you're going to do the QE and they do it for you.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think it will work.
Okay, well, on that note, I'm sure we'll have you back on the show again when we, you know, 6 months down the line, 12 months down the line, we'll have a bit more talk about, you know, as we move past this kind of, if it is a transitory disinflationary period, and we'll have you back on the show to have a chat about inflation. So don't go anywhere. After we've done with our finance section, after the break, we're going to sports, so don't go anywhere.